no clothes on anybody. Sickening. Cool firecrackers. I'll save these for later.
Buzz, I'm going through all your private stuff. You better come out and pound me.
Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Hello, I'm world-famous television news broadcaster Brendan McLaughlin, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast. That makes you really smart.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1...
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 119, and the last one for the rest of the year, 2015. I wish you a Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. I hope it's just fine and dandy for you. My name is Will Coons, host of the Homemade Broadcast, right here on Radio St. Pete. I'm excited. I finally get a break for a little while. Work is slow. Going to take a break from the podcast for a little while, till after my buddy's wedding here. So we'll probably do some replays or something of that nature. But this week on the Homemade Broadcast, I have the joy of speaking with the Tampa Bay Times entertainment writer, Jay Cridlin. So we're just going to go ahead and get into that. I will sign off after the interview. I'll come back and talk to you for just a minute. But until then, let's talk to Mr. Jay Cridlin. Jay Cridlin, welcome to the Homemade Broadcast. How are you, man?
Hi, Will. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm okay. I'm ready to be done for the year. I kind of recorded my year in review last week, even though it was technically supposed to be this week. But due to scheduling conflicts, mm-hmm. I just decided to do the year in review this week. This is my last show of the year this week.
It's closer to the end of the year. It works out better that way.
True.
Yeah.
True. So, welcome. And you are are you an entertainment writer, critic? I don't know what the official title is.
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a pop music culture critic, pop music and culture critic for the Tampa Bay Times. But the way that it's printed out is pop music / culture critic, which encompasses a lot of different stuff. The / just makes it sound cool, I think.
And how long have you been with the Times?
I've been with the Times since 2002, since I graduated college and came straight down and got a job here. And kind of worked my way around the paper. I started in our Tampa bureau and moved over to our Brandon bureau when we reopened that. And after a couple of years there, came to TBT, where I'd spent 3 or 4 years writing and just entertainment stories. Became an editor there, the editor of the weekend section every week. And then this year I became the pop music and culture critic for the Times at large. So it wasn't that much of an evolution because I launched our music blog, Soundcheck, in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so I've been writing about music for, more than, going on 7 years now. So it was just kind of a natural transition for me to start doing that full time.
Right, and you took over for Sean Daly?
Yep, Sean left the Times earlier this year, became a game show host on HSN, where he's doing a killer job.
Really?
Yeah. He was actually on, the other day, he was on Andy Cohen's show on Bravo, he was the bartender there that night. So he's getting out there, he's got a huge fan base, and I think he's doing a great job on HSN.
It's a different career path from writing to game show host.
It is, but Sean is the guy who can pull it off. He was one of my favorite writers at the Times when he was still here, and he's still a great writer. I've seen him write a few freelance pieces here and there. But he's got a huge personality. I've been to weddings that he's emceed, and he's just a natural in front of the camera. He's been doing that for years for stations around town, and for him to be a game show host couldn't be more up his alley.
Yeah, what kind of game show is it, do you know?
Yeah, on Friday nights, I think they call it Friday Game Night, I believe is what it's called. And just kind of, it's like an interstitial between the sales packages on HSN. He'll come in for a few minutes during commercials, and people will call in and have a chance to win prizes. And so he's got himself a nice national fan base.
So Home Shopping Network is getting into the reality
Absolutely.
TV game.
I think that's fascinating. They've had some original programming before. They've taped live concerts there. They really got into the music game a couple of years ago and have had people like Lionel Richie and Rod Stewart and Mary J. Blige come in and tape concerts at HSN in St. Pete, kind of below the radar of everybody's mind for like concert specials, mm-hmm. which are cool. And I've been to a couple of those. And they've done some other original programming in the past. This is not a show per se, but it's just like an ongoing all Friday night thing that that he's doing a great job with.
Cool. So you took over for him when?
I think April-ish, May, although he took another job within the Times last fall, November or December of 2014. And at that point, I just started doing all the music writing for the Times. So even though I was kind of doing two jobs at once, I was doing all the music writing, and then I was also still editing at TBT at that time. But in April, May of this year is when I kind of transitioned to just writing about music and pop culture.
Mm-hmm. And you went to school here? You're from the area?
No, grew up in Virginia. Very small town in the mountains, and went to college at Wake Forest, studied English and journalism, and just got lucky right out of college, got a job at the paper. It was kind of the lowest rung on the ladder that you could get, a clerk, we call it an editorial assistant in our Tampa office. And so I got to write a lot because I wrote a lot in college, and they, you know, anybody who can write, they put you to good use at the Times. And I was fortunate enough to get a lot of assignments, and they let me do a lot of different stories and made me a reporter when the opportunity came up. So,
was it always entertainment based, or was it just whatever you know they gave you?
Whatever they gave me, I always had in mind that I wanted to write about features. I like feature stories, feature writing, and so at that time, the Times still had a daily Floridian section. That was one of the things I might have wanted to do, was just write daily oddball features about culture and everything at large. Writing columns also appealed to me, but I never really set out to be a music critic. I've always liked music. I just never really thought of it as being something that I wanted to do. And part of that is I think the idea of a music critic traditionally has always been somebody who tells you what music is good, like tells you if an album is good or not, or if it's something that you should be listening to or not. And that's not something I really ever aspired to do. I wasn't like a crate-digging junkie who just wanted to show you how much I know about music. I just like telling good stories. And as I started doing it, especially more and more once we launched Soundcheck in 2009, I just found that there were good stories in music that we weren't covering. And so I started writing, looking for feature stories about musicians and people in the business, and also just kind of trying to break news when possible about concerts coming to Tampa Bay, because I like going to concerts, and that sort of thing wasn't really, there wasn't a great outlet for that, to let people know when something was coming to town. And I also noticed that we would preview a lot of shows but not cover them. And that was something that a lot of newspapers in bigger markets around the country would always do. They had a pretty robust music coverage scene, but they didn't, you know, and they would send people to cover things that weren't just the big arena shows or the amphitheater shows. They would go to club shows and cover local music in some ways that sometimes we didn't. And I thought there was a void there, and so I just started doing as much of that as I could. My MO has always been just write as much as you can and don't turn down assignments. So I had a lot of opportunity to do that, and just made the most of it.
Is that kind of why there's previews and not actually reviews? Is that more of like a budget thing where they don't have the capital to pay reporters now? Because I know that as we move into this more of a digital age now, print is kind of going out the window. You used to be able to sell papers. Now they're all, a lot of them are just free periodicals, and everything's moving online now.
Right. Well, ostensibly the purpose of, you know, most entertainment or most publications in a lot of ways is to let you know what's going on. You know, so in that sense, we do more previews than anything else. Our goal with the Thursday weekend section and the Friday weekend section in TBT is to say, here's what's going on the week ahead. Plan your weekend, plan your week, what's coming up. And when we, you know, when there's a tour announced or a show coming up, I try to get the word out there and let people know that it's happening so they can put it on their calendar for months down the line. And that's a big part of what we do. Covering the shows, I think there's interesting reasons to do that. One is that I think, just as a concert goer, as a music fan, I like sort of seeing my experience reflected through somebody else's eyes or through somebody else's ears, and seeing if they saw the same things I did. You know, if I read a good concert review, it kind of helps me relive that concert a little bit, which is what I try to do when I write them, approach them from the perspective of a fan who bought the ticket. And in that sense, you kind of pick and choose your spots. I mean, I end up doing a lot of big shows by default. That just, when you're the main person writing about music, you end up covering a lot of arena shows and theater shows and amphitheater shows. And when you get to the club shows and local shows, you do as much of that as you can. But then it becomes 3, 4, 5 nights a week, and that's just too much for an old man like me.
Yeah, what's the staff like? Is it just you, or do you have a what do you call it? Is it like a periodical staff or something that kind of does some writing and reviewing? And
well, in terms of music, it's mostly me. We occasionally freelance writers will chip in and do some stuff, and we do have other freelance writers who write previews of concerts for the Tampa Bay Times and TBT. Ray Roa, who's a great local music writer, does some stuff for TBT and the Times, and he's great. But the Times is actually fortunate, you know, that we have a pretty robust feature and entertainment writing staff. A lot of newspapers don't, but the Times is, even though they've downsized a little bit, has managed to keep a pretty full roster of critics, film critic, art critic, performing arts, books, restaurants. Along with editors and copy editors who do all that stuff as well. And the Times feature sections are pretty well regarded around the nation. And I'm lucky to be a part of that. I learned from all those people who've been doing it much longer than I have, and just try to kind of live up within my specific niche or beat to what they do, the kind of job that they do for their respective beats.
So it's not so much the budget. It's more that maybe that the reporters are lazy.
Not at the Times. No, I mean, I think everybody's pretty hardworking.
No, I didn't mean not at the Times. I meant just like in general, maybe at other papers, why they don't go out of their way to cover these things. It's kind of, I know the Times probably has more of a budget too than say a lot of the other papers around the country, even because of the. I mean, the Tampa Bay Times is a pretty prestigious paper. It's won Pulitzers. It's, you know, it's definitely one of the top dogs, I think, in the industry.
It is, we've certainly had budget cutbacks too. I know it used to be the Times would send writers to cover the Grammys and go out of the, you know, out of town to cover festivals and things like that. And we don't really do that as much anymore. Occasionally, we'll hit the road to do some stories, and budgetary concerns are definitely a reason why that's shrunk, but not the only reason. In newspapers everywhere, the news, the size of space, the space allotted for news has shrunk as we sort of cut back on the number of pages. And so there may not be as much cause for a giant story about this or that, a report from Coachella, as there would have been, you know, 15 years ago. So I pick and choose my spots, kind of, and I've traveled to a few music festivals here and there over the years, and every once in a while I'll do a travel story. This fall I did one on Dollywood in Tennessee and talked to Dolly Parton and wrote a piece about sort of what that park, how that reflects on her legacy as a performer. And you just kind of pick and choose your spots. You know, when there's a good cause for a nice, thoughtful, critical piece about some element of our culture, especially if it's something musical and we can use every part of the buffalo, so to speak, then it's worth our time and energy to invest in covering it, I think. In terms of volume of covering local stuff, it's just a matter of how much time and energy you can devote to it. I mean, critics have weird hours, you know. It's definitely not a 9-to-5 job. It's you work during the day when you can. You work late into the night a lot of times. Sometimes you cover something that happens all day on a Saturday. You just try to work in your time off when you can. And in that sense, I'm lucky that I have editors who kind of understand and encourage me to take these weird hours and cover things at all times of the week, and they just let me run with my own schedule in that regard. And I've chosen to cover generally about 1 to 3 concerts a week. I think that's doable in my life, and hopefully it gives people something to read the next morning, just some reflection of the culture that was the previous night in Tampa Bay.
Right, and I'm with Jay Cridlin. He is the entertainment writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Jay, I've noticed that music, even with the smaller papers, the Creative Loafings, the TBTs, for example, that are more in-depth with the culture here in the Bay Area, they cover, you know, many different things, music seems to be the big thing no matter where you go. Many other art forms, comedy, art, visual art. I don't know. Those are two examples. But they don't get as much play as music does. Why do you think that is?
Well, when I launched our Soundcheck blog a few years ago, I knew a bit about our local music scene. I didn't know a ton. And so I decided to do a deep dive into it with a project where I covered 50 different concerts at 50 different venues across Tampa Bay over the course of a summer, which is a lot.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was 50 venues here.
There's more than 50 venues. I mean, I definitely missed a few. There are places in Tampa Bay I still haven't seen a concert in. And I tried to, you know, when you do that, it exposes you not just to a lot of different styles of music and types of music, but it shows you just how much music takes place here on a given night. I mean, I dare say that on every single night in Tampa Bay, there's 50 or 100 people playing music for the public, mm-hmm. all across town. Some of them are getting paid and some of them aren't. Some of them might be at an amphitheater or arena or theater, or some people might just be playing Margaritaville on the beach. But it's everywhere you look. And if you start to look at, you know, calendar listings and what bars do night in and night out and open mics and everything, you see just how prevalent it is all over town. And so while there might be 3 or 4 movies that open in a given week, or 1 or 2 big art exhibits that open in a given week, there's music all over the place all the time. And it's not the most popular thing to go out and do, I think. I mean, this week everybody's going to go see Star Wars, and they're probably not going to go see somebody singing Margaritaville on the beach. But but there's so much of it out there, and it touches people's lives in so many different ways. They might play music, or they might sing in the choir at their church, or they might have a child who takes lessons, or they might just collect vintage records or something. It's pervasive in people's lives in a way that sometimes we don't always understand. I've always thought that, and this is getting a little more high-minded than most people probably would think about it, but sound is a sense. It's something that every human experiences. There are 5 senses, and sound is one of them. What you hear and how you process what you hear is a big part of being human. And so that gets to something that's deeper than just what record came out this week that's good. The process of hearing and experiencing sound is something that unites people in a way that most people can't even articulate. I certainly can't, but I'm trying to as I do this more and more often. It's just a big thing. It's pervasive in people's lives. And that's why I think music just kind of gets people in a way that a lot of other things don't.
Yeah, I think you're right. There definitely is much more music happening probably than comedy, for example. But I will say that there is multiple comedy shows every day of the week here. And I guess from my own experience, a lot of people don't like comedy. I don't know why. I guess if it's someone that they don't know, they're hesitant to go see. But I'm kind of like that with music.
Yeah.
Like, if it's somebody I don't know and I got to pay $3, I'm like, I'd rather just have the $3.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's weird because I've had shows where we had national touring comedians come through that I've hosted for. And just $5? Really?
Well, it's hard. I think people don't know that there's a comedy scene outside Side Splitters and the Improv.
That's
very
true, yes.
The general public, for sure. I mean, there's a community of comedians and comedy fans in Tampa Bay who will go to open mic nights or special nights at bars and clubs that are not known as comedy clubs. And you'll hear some great comics, and you'll get to know some people who have gotten national love. And occasionally, you know, an act like, I think it was last week that Kyle Kinane and Brooks Whelan played at New World Brewery, just a surprise show. And I don't think a lot of people knew, certainly nobody knew about it before, like, the day it happened. I think they just announced it on Monday and the show was Tuesday. You just kind of have to be paying attention to that sort of stuff to do it. And then I think, you know, there's a difference between the discerning comedy fan and just people who want to go to a club, who just want to go see whoever is at the Improv that night. Because that's a date night thing, and you can get your drinks and see just whatever's happening at a big club like that. Sometimes it's a name you know, sometimes it's not. But that's kind of the case everywhere, isn't it? You know, there are mainstream clubs, and there are sort of pockets where there's a cool open mic or a cool special comedy night one night of the week that only a few people know about.
I think you're right, and also to add on to that, I think comedy is probably a little different than music, because you can listen to the same song from the same band a few times, and you won't really notice. But if you hear the same joke from the same comedian, if it's just one guy up there, you're going to remember his face, you're going to remember his tone. You know, that's the complaint that I've had with my shows. I run the mic at Sly Bar. So I get a lot of people that come through that I don't understand how some of these comics can't write five more minutes every week, or at least, you know, two more minutes, something new. A few of them that do the same jokes every 2 weeks, and it's hurt me with people that are like, I just can't listen to it anymore. It was funny, but I can't listen to it.
I wonder if Florida was always like that, because Florida had a really, I mean, back during the comedy boom of the late 80s, Florida, and the early 90s, Florida had a ton of comics who've gone on to great big things, and there were more comedy bars. And I just wonder what the scene was like then. There are some veterans around town who were there when it happened and who still perform around town, but it was a different type of comedy, a different type of scene back then. But I wonder if it was the same way, if they only had their, you know, their 10 or 15 if they were middling, or, you know, if they hopped onto a national act who came into one of the big clubs and, you know, they opened or featured or something. I wonder if it was the same way, or if they wrote constantly or encountered the same kind of audiences who may have gotten bored with the same 2 minutes here and there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not really sure. I had Danny Bevins on a while ago. He's an old veteran. He lived out in L.A. for a long time and is back here now. He just shot a new special at Coconuts a couple weeks ago. And he opened up for, what's that guy's? Billy Gardell.
Yeah.
At the Mahaffey not too long ago. We talked briefly about what it was like back then, but I kind of got the vibe that it was kind of the same now. You know, I've noticed definitely in the past year that I see a new person every time.
Mm.
And I got a lot of the same that come back, but I also have probably, you know, 25% of them are brand new.
Yeah.
That I don't see. So I know there's a lot of people doing it. I know there's a lot of people interested in at least doing it. And the crowds are pretty good, you know, generally for open mics. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. People just hate comedy. I just, because like I said, we had JT Habersack come through. And this lady paid the money, and I literally heard her say, "I just hate comedy." I don't. I think a lot of it has to do with people being offended now too. The culture has kind of shifted into this new. It was PC. I remember even I was pretty young, but I remember even at the beginning in the 2000s, the PC thing was kind of swinging through, and then the pendulum swung back, and now I feel like the pendulum has swung back even harder now with the increased speed. And I think a lot of people are afraid of being offended or hearing something they're not going to want to hear. You know, there's safe spaces on college campuses now, which don't exist in real life. These colleges are doing these kids a disservice, I think, frankly, by kowtowing to them. So I think that's part of it, too. They're just afraid of hearing something that they may not agree with. And instead of having a conversation about it, people just will cut it off and say, "You're a racist." Just throw those nukes, you know, those nuke cards at you, and then the conversation's over. And that's what comedy, I think, used to be about, was I have a theory that it's pointing out hypocrisies in life, and then you kind of get a chuckle out of it because that's funny because it's true, and then nobody does anything about it, of course. But people can point it out and be critical of society. And now it's kind of, it's not like that anymore. People don't talk to each other. I think it's the flow of information. There's so much stuff out there. I read a story, and then I can find another story a few links down that totally contradict that story.
Yeah.
So I have this real problem with, like, I don't know how you find the truth in what you read. And I guess you just got to read them both and trust your gut and find the truth in that.
Pretty much. That's the best way to live life, I think. I think also, too, it's ironic because this is a time when I think more people are as savvy as ever about comedy. I feel like there's so many comedy podcasts, and smart comedy has become such an accessible part of our culture in a way that it wasn't 20 years ago, that, you know, people who live everywhere in the country could probably name 5 or 6 comedy hotspots in Los Angeles. You know, they know the hottest comedy nights in LA just because they listen to enough podcasts and they listen to interviews with enough comedians to know it. So it's interesting that hasn't, I think that in some ways maybe that awareness, that savvy has led to scenes popping up in places like Tampa and St. Pete. This idea that anybody can kind of do it and curate your own little comedy community around it and watch that grow as Tampa's and St. Pete's has. But it's also revealing that that has not totally cracked the entire mainstream market. It's interesting because people who love podcasts they live in that world and they can tell you the most detailed info about everybody's life, but there are still people out there in the world who haven't heard, you know, Mark Maron's podcast or haven't heard Serial. You know, they don't know that podcasting exists. It's revealing that some people just don't see comedy the way that maybe the people within each of these scenes sees it.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely going to change within the next few years. I mean, it already is. You know, cars are coming with 4G, and then now, there was satellite radio, and that was kind of the progression from regular FM radio, and now satellite is just going to move into podcasting. Some people are going to get left behind in that, but it's so accessible now. Everybody has a smartphone, and if you have a smartphone, you got every podcast you could ever want. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, you'll have it in your car. But also, I know human beings have a lot of problems with choice. If you have more than three choices, you don't know what
it's
to
crippling,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so you have to find people that you can relate to and like. Because even me, I'm a podcaster, and I can only find like three podcasts that I really listen to religiously.
And it's hard to get into new ones. I mean, like, some of them have 1,000 episodes now, or it seems like, you know, 500, 1,000 episodes. Where do you even begin, you know, to get into a podcast that everybody loves? You kind of have to just dive in, find a guest that you like, start there, and work outward. Find the chemistry that you like with the hosts or the host, and just go from there. And that just, maybe that's your way in. But for a lot of people, that hasn't happened yet. There's just, it's not as pervasive as podcast listeners, I think it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's hard, you know, because someone like me, who's nobody really, I mean, I kind of started this just for fun. And then I got lucky enough to get hooked up with Radio St. Pete. So the small audience that they have, I have access to. And then
sure,
I get, you know, people that way to listen. But for somebody just interested in something, starting a podcast, I don't really know why you'd even bother at that point. So, I mean,
it's like that with every art form, though. I mean, like, how do you begin to write a book? How do you begin how do you start a band? You know, how do you do any of those things? And the people who do it, who take that plunge and are bold enough to try it and give it a whirl, those are the ones that you are somehow compelled to listen to. They have something to say that they just can't not say. And that is always what makes art interesting.
True. I always say, do it, because I get asked, well, how do you start a podcast? I mean, you just start. You find some things, talk about them. I mean, I got my setup here for less than $200. You don't need this. I have this because I like the feel of having, it's kind of like having a studio, you know, it's fun. It's what I pictured as a little kid when I was playing R. Kelly and announcing it on my antenna on my boombox. This is what I kind of pictured. Not like this, obviously, a little bit more fancy. But people, you know, they ask me and I tell them and then they still don't do it. So, but like I said, I think I'm blessed in the fact that I have Radio St. Pete, because otherwise I don't know if I'd continue doing it, just because, you know, it's fun and all, but who's really going to listen to it?
Hey, writing is the same way. I mean, I'm lucky that I have, you know, a really big and well-read platform and respected, and one that people tune into, and they would be reading music writing there if I were long gone. But I tell people the same thing if they want to get into writing as well. Just write. Just as much as you want. Write every day. Carry a notepad with you. Write into your phone as much as you can. Because you can, if you write a sentence a day, you'll have a book in a few years. You know, all you have to do is sit down and write, and it'll come to you. I tell freelancers, if you want to be a freelance writer, don't turn any assignments down. Always pitch. Always listen. Always listen to assignments. Try to do what you can, and just write. It's the only, write and read. Those are the only ways you're going to really improve constantly as a writer. Just do both as much as you can.
Absolutely, and a lot of people do not do that, which I'm thankful that they don't, frankly,
yeah,
because it gives more opportunity for me or you, you know, to get out there,
yeah,
and do it. I mean, that's a big part of it. I don't discount luck either.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big part of it.
100%.
You have to obviously have some skill, but I know a lot of talented people that I think are as good as anything that you see or hear or look at, you know, that they just don't either have the work ethic to go out there and really push themselves, or they're just not lucky.
Yeah. Well, luck, I mean, it's, what's that old saying? Luck is, it is what you make of, what you make of it. I mean, you can put yourself into, you can put yourself into any number of positions to capitalize on luck when they happen. I, like I said, I never set out to be a critic. I just, I liked music and I liked to write, and I was always looking for interesting things to write. And it just, I just started writing more and more about music. If there was something that our entertainment writers weren't writing, I would step in and write that. Because that was one of the things when TBT launched that we did a lot of. TBT launched in 2004, and I came on at the beginning of 2005 as a full-time writer for TBT, and we just started covering the things that the Tampa Bay Times, then the St. Pete Times, wasn't covering. And that just became what I looked for. If there was an opening, I tried to cover it. And gradually you do enough of that, you put yourself in a position to, you know, you get bigger assignments, you do more and more interesting and quote-unquote prestigious things, and you just sort of humbly take those assignments and run with those and work as hard as you can on them, and hopefully more cool things come to your way. So people have said, yeah, being a music critic is like a dream job, and it is. I can't discount that, but I feel like I got here just by keeping my head down and writing as many things as I could, as often as I could, and putting myself into a position where when it opened up, I was sort of a natural person to slide in.
Mm-hmm. Jay Cridlin from the Tampa Bay Times is joining me today on the Homemade Broadcast. Being a music critic, I've always found critics, I don't know what it means, because it's so, it's like art, you know, it's just your opinion on something. What do you think makes a good critic, and what do you think being a critic means? What does it mean to you?
You know, I've thought about that a lot, because when I was just writing about music for our music blog, we had a critic, you know, Sean was our music critic, and I just thought of myself as a music beat writer. I would just write feature stories and report on things like I would do anything. If I was a government reporter, or I covered the Rays or the Bucks, or I covered business or food or anything, I would just attack it like a feature writer would attack that beat. And so I tried to do that with music, and you know, you have to sort of inject a little bit of yourself here and there, and the more shows you cover and the more artists you talk to, the more confident you get about being able to ascertain what makes an interesting performance or a great performance, or what sort of elevates one artistic experience you know, over another, possibly. And you start being more confident about how you can actually say how good it is. And you know, I'm the first person to point out, I don't create art, you know, I try to cover it in a way that most critics do. So it's not really my place to say, you suck, this sucks, this rules.
And you don't have like a star system, like this is 3.5 stars.
You know, when we started this, I will tell you, I don't like record reviews. I don't really read album reviews that much. And I've never liked them. I just don't find them super instructive. If one of my favorite bands comes out with a new album, I might browse around to see what a couple of publications say about it. But so, you know, and that's a weird thing, because I don't like them and I don't really want to write them. So when I became the critic, the question becomes, well, how do you, I have to reflect what music comes out. So I had to think of a way to start writing album reviews with a way that gelled with how I looked at albums. And what I did for the first few months, and what I'm still doing, although I haven't done one in a while, is sort of review 2 or 3 albums at once, albums that are within the same realm, pop albums or rock albums, or, you know, 2 big British rock albums, or, you know, 2 new poppy albums or something, and sort of review them within the context of one another, and say, well, this is the sort of state of this style of music right now. How are these 2 artists approaching it? And rather than assign a letter grade, I'll just say, who do I think did it better? And, you know, they both could do it great, but I just say, I like this album slightly better than this one. So if this is the kind of music you're in the mood for right now, try this. The only sort of overall judging that I'm doing now, I'm actually working on this week, is just year in review best of stuff, which I've never really done before. And so trying to go back through all the music that was released this year, and you know, I haven't heard 99% of all the music that was released this year. I've listened to as much as I can, but it's just endless, and nobody could listen to the amount of music released in a year. And just trying to figure out what I think is the best and most relevant, and you know, the stuff that people should remember from 2015. And that's been a long process. It's been fun because I just like listening to stuff and making lists. But that's been one I've put a lot of time into just to figure out how to possibly pit all these great albums against one another.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds fair. So, yeah, I mean, it is kind of one of those things where it kind of depends on you, even your moods, your emotions. If you're angry, you may not or you may react differently than if you're content. Or it's just being critics that get paid to do it, that's awesome that you get to do that. But it's kind of, to me, it just seems kind of nonsense. It doesn't matter.
It's also, in this day and age, it doesn't, you know, who cares what a critic thinks about something? Like, music is so accessible now to everybody in the world. It's not like 20 years ago before the advent of social media where you might need to go to your record store. Nothing against record stores, but you might need to go to your record store to pick up a zine or pick up a magazine or talk to the clerk to find out, well, what's new this week that's cool. Everybody has access to everything that's new and cool all the time on, you know, streaming services. So nobody really needs me to tell them if the new Justin Bieber record is any good. If they can find out for themselves, and if that's what they're into, then they don't need me to confirm or deny that necessarily, which is why I pick my spots in terms of the records I do review. I do a lot more quote-unquote criticism with concert reviews. And again, even then, I try to do so not from the lens of me just as a music lover, but I do so from the perspective of a fan who would have plunked down money to see that artist. Do I think that... if I were a fan of this artist, would I have gotten my money's worth? Would I have really enjoyed the show? Do I pick up what they're laying down? Am I feeling their vibe? And sometimes I do, because I tend to go to a lot of shows by great artists, but sometimes I don't, and I have to call them out on that. But again, it's not me making it about me. It's sort of trying to critically appraise what they're doing and understand what they're doing and capturing how well they seem to have pulled that off.
Okay, so in the last few minutes here, I know you got to get out of here. We kind of talked about it briefly already, but if you want to be a writer, obviously writing all the time, but what other, like, school-wise information, like, how does somebody become a writer and work for a successful paper?
Yeah, it's... finding jobs at a newspaper is hard, or any kind of publication is hard, because the staffs and budgets have been cut back, you know. So I wish I had better insight there on how to actually get a job with a newspaper. But what I would say is you can always write as much as you want, even if you're just writing thoughts on Facebook, writing, you know, covering your block on Facebook, cover some sort of micro niche scene, and do it in a way that... that you think has a bit of a journalistic feel. Read publications and, you know, there's no elegant way to say it. Try to write like these other publications write, because that's how you learn to write, by reading so many other people. You know, I wouldn't write how I write if I didn't grow up reading, you know, certain columnists. Start pitching ideas to your local newspaper. When I was an editor, I would listen to every idea somebody threw at me, even if they weren't a super experienced writer. And sometimes I would say, yeah, sure, do that, even if they didn't have a lot of clips to their name. And sometimes it would work out and sometimes it wouldn't. But you only really know how to – you'd only really do that and build up the cred to start writing regularly if you write and pitch and have a lot of different ideas that you're willing to put out there in the world, and if you're willing to say yeah to a lot of different assignments. If you do the stories that no one else is willing to do, that's how you make a name for yourself.
Yeah, just doing the work, man.
Yeah,
no doubt.
And I say stories, but it's like, you know, Twitter can be a story. You can tell a story in 140 characters. You can go to an event and live tweet it or post photos on Facebook or something. You can be a journalist in this world without having a press pass. You just have to report on your own life experiences. And over time, you sort of collect all that into something that reflects your worldview.
Yeah, I think, like, having a niche-y thing, too, because, like, nobody's just totally unique. Everyone has some weird thing that they like that probably a lot of other people like. So if you maybe find something like that, right? And
yeah.
And then kind of report on that.
Yep, yeah. If you live in Plant City. You could cover the Plant City music scene better than anybody ever has if right. you wanted to. You could cover bands that don't get press. You could cover bars that have open mics. You could do something better than it's ever been done before if you just focus on it and look for things that aren't being covered right now. You never know until you actually set out and start doing it. And it's a hard thing to tell somebody to do because it's a lot of work with no reward. You don't get a salary for it, but if it's really what you want to do, it's the way to go about it. You can go to school for this sort of thing, but I like I said, I didn't major in journalism. I minored in it, but I studied English. I studied books and reading and writing and tried to put those skills to good use as best I could. More than anything, I just worked for my college newspaper. So if you can find any publication that's willing to let you write, even if it's just even if you don't get paid, even if it's just for having your name attached to the story, that's better than nothing.
Do the work. That's pretty much it. Do the work, and you will be maybe not successful. Luck, do the work, you'll be successful. Jay, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have social media where people can find you?
Yeah, it's at Jay Cridlin, J-A-Y Cridlin, on Twitter, and at Cridlin on Instagram.
All right, very good. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks.
All right, that was Jay Cridlin with the Tampa Bay Times. Thank you, Jay, for coming in. It was a good interview. I had a good time talking to that guy, and hopefully we will speak again in the future at some point. The only things I have to tell you, other than have a happy holiday, is we got the Homemade Broadcast stand-up comedy open mic coming up on the 22nd at Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, and this podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Thank you, Sly Bar, for a great friggin' year, man. It's exceeded my expectations. Good things have happened. Check out slybar.com. And also thank you to Angelo's Bar and Grill, 536 First Avenue North, stpizza.com. They provide the pizza for us at the open mic, and it is free. Free pizza. Everybody loves pizza, and especially everybody loves free. So come hang out with us on the 22nd at Sly Bar. Check out hmbradio.com for more info on that. We have a roast of Santa Claus coming up at Foo Bar. I don't know where that is. Check out hmbradio.com, and it's on Central Avenue. I think it's the 500 block. You know where Foo Bar is. I'm sure you've been if you're a Tampa Bay resident. That's going to be involving Kyle Roos is putting that show on. I'm going to be hosting that for him and some other great comics. Chris Mattson, Andrew Silas, John J. Murray. I think that's it. So that should be a great time. I think that's free, and it's we're collecting toys for needy families. So bring a toy with you or some money for a donation. We would certainly appreciate it. Happy holidays, everybody, and a very happy new year to you. As I said, I'm very humbled and thankful and excited about what's coming in 2016. A lot of cool stuff's been happening lately. So thank you for your support. Thank you to Radio St. Pete for giving me the opportunity to talk to the fine folks over at Radio St. Pete a couple times a week now. Catch the replay at 10:15 p.m. if you miss any of the Homemade broadcasts. Of course, they're available on demand in the Radio St. Pete archive. And more shows coming to HMB Radio. No HMB sides this week, but the Taoist Cowboys have sent me their file. They have their first show in the can, and that will probably be up either Monday or Tuesday up on HMB Radio. I got to click through it today. It was hilarious. Very well produced, very well done. Joey Statler and Damien, those guys are killing it. I'm very happy to have them. And James Bailey's My Mom's Favorite Podcast is also available on HMB Radio. John Jacobs's Couch Talk will be coming in 2016. Big year for HMB Radio. Thank you again. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Ramadan. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Christmas. And if I missed anybody, I'm sorry. So, signing off for a little while. I'm sure there'll be replays. Maybe not. Maybe we'll just listen to Christmas music. I'm going to go watch some bowl games, eat some food, have a good time. Thank you again. I will talk to you soon. Take it easy.